You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, our weekly talk show on Brooklyn's Radio. I'm Sharon Finch and today I'll be chatting to two fabulous women with very different jobs. First up will be Mary Akerslan, who is Head of Learning Support at a local school. And then we have Claire Garner, who is a musician and has recently set up her own orchestra in Chertsey. We can't wait to hear from them both, so without further ado, I'm delighted to welcome our first guest, Mary Akerslan. Welcome to the show, Mary, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Sharon.
So we normally start by asking our guests for a bit of background information. I know that you are Head of Learning Support. Could you just tell us how you came to be interested in learning support?
Well, actually, I fell into it. As I think with the things that you find that you're best at, you generally never really make a plan to go into them. I actually wanted to be a television presenter for a very long time. And so when I came out of university, I started, very luckily, working at the BBC Television Centre, a long time ago now, about 20 years ago. And I did about 8 or 9 years there, various different things, loved it. One of the best times ever in my life. But then life happens. I got married, and working at the BBC at the time really wasn't conducive for a relationship because of night shifts and things like that. You know, I was never really at home. So I left the BBC, but then thought, well, I don't want to do it, nothing. So I thought, well, I kind of like children.
That's good, considering you've got one.
Do I? They're all right. Maybe I'd like to spend some time with them. So actually a friend of mine said, oh, there's a job going in a local school in London for a teaching assistant. Do you want to give it a go? And I said, yeah, why not? I'll do something part-time just to see how it goes. And as they say, the rest is history, Sharon.
So did you moved on to English teaching as well, didn't you?
Well, the thing is that back in those days, you could work as a teaching assistant, essentially. Yes, you had to have qualifications. You can't have just anybody going into a secondary school and saying that they can help children with various GCSE subjects. So you have to be fairly competent. But then I did split with my husband. And so I found myself in a situation where I was a single mother to a two-year-old. And it really did make me have to sit up and think, I need more than this. I can't, if I want to provide for my child in the way in which I was brought up, I need to actually get a qualification. And whilst I'm in the school, let's see what I can do for them and they can do for me. So actually, I then filled in for a head of special educational needs when she went on maternity leave. And then I decided to take a teacher qualification, to enter onto a teacher qualification. And that was really hard work because it was, you know, working at night by lamplight, a bit like a Charles Dickens novel, living in a little bedsit with my daughter. So they were hard times, let's
Pardon
say.
The label.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yes, no, that's why.
Yeah, and that's how it started. So that was about 12 years ago. And then so I was a qualified English teacher. Then I was the Senko in that school for 8 years. And it was a comprehensive school in London, so it wasn't easy. And I've been doing it since then.
12 years ago, the learning needs situation was probably a lot different to now with dyslexia and the numbers of cases. Why do you think that is?
I mean, as you know, when you and I were children, were of a similar age, there was no such thing.
How lovely.
Oh yeah. there really wasn't any such thing. If you struggle to string a sentence together on paper, you were just, quite frankly, put at the back of the class and labeled weak. And I think that with the whole government drive about 15 to 20 years ago of Every Child Matters, which was all around safeguarding children primarily, because there had been such a a black hole with regards protecting children. I think that's when it really started. It was safeguarding children at home, but also within the school, and then looking for ways to support them better. And then, you know, dyslexia, ADHD, all of these things became more prevalent.
Have you had any cases where there have been behavioural issues which hasn't been linked to any psychological, it's more food or what they're eating, diet, lack of exercise, or is it kind of all rolled into one?
That's interesting. I think mental health has played the biggest part in that. And in schools, I think mostly I have dealt with those situations where the child has been potentially having a hard time in their home life. It crosses over. If you have behavioural problems, you might have an unidentified learning disability. You might have a neurological issue that's not been picked up, like ASD. Mm. You might be on the autistic spectrum. You might have an eating disorder as well. They are all rolled into one. And as time has moved on, we are getting better at identifying these things and seeing a bigger picture. It's almost like mind mapping the child in the centre, and then mind mapping all the different areas and trying to then consolidate and find out how we move forward.
And what do you do on a day-to-day basis as head of learning support?
It's a lot of pre-planning, really, with learning support. It's about liaising with parents. Parents, you know, understandably, you are looking after their most treasured asset, if you like. You know, before money, before clothes, before cars, before holidays, their children are the most important thing to them. And so a lot of pre-planning with parents who are very anxious. So a lot of meetings, a lot of being very understanding, a lot of note-taking, a lot of listening, just a lot of listening. I think that's the most important thing that parents and children need, to be listened to and seen and treated as an individual. So I do that. I have a lot of meetings in the week with parents. I tutor as well the children myself. I tutor them in English, GCSE and up to A-level. And I also mainly provide teachers with differentiated materials and teach the teachers how to differentiate accordingly.
So plans according to individual needs for, say, looking at whiteboards or sitting at the front or being...
Yeah, so if you are dyslexic, for example, not every dyslexic is the same, but we have to sometimes blanket these things. So don't use PowerPoints with white backgrounds. Don't give the child a PowerPoint in front of them, a printout with loads and loads of text. It's too overwhelming for them. Perhaps give them a green overlay or a different coloured overlay, so we test out the children and see which colours work better for them. Change their exercise books so the paper's not even white anymore. So all these different little things can actually go to make a big difference.
Do you have to go on regular training courses to keep up with latest methods and suggestions and analysis?
You don't have to, but it is a good idea. And actually, it's a really good idea to stay involved with the local education authority, because they're very good at running training sessions, keeping everybody aware of, because everything changes all the time. You know, just like phones do. You think you've got the latest phone, you don't have the latest phone.
As you can see, I haven't got the latest phone.
You don't, you don't, Sharon, actually. I can vouch for that.
Do you mix with, liaise with other schools, heads of learning support from other schools, and kind of exchange information or...?
Well, in the state system, which I used to be in, yes, you do. And in a way, it was easier working in the state system. I say in a way because actually it was incredibly stressful. And I feel a little bit bad having come out, and I've actually gone into the private sector now. A little bit bad, not that much bad. Because it's less stressful. But in the state sector, you were liaising with other schools on a regular basis. And in the private sector, you don't. You are a little bit on an island. Okay. So I do miss that, actually.
Have you got more independence at a private school to kind of take things one way or the other?
No. Okay. I don't know. I don't think so, actually, because with a private school, you are very much under the leadership of the head teacher and the governors. And they, because they don't have to listen to anybody else, such as the local education authority, sometimes it can be a bit tricky to alert them to changes they might need to make. And you might not be able to get them to really listen to those. But, you know, it's half, what is it, half a dozen of one and six of the other?
That sounds
good. Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
I'm not a mathematician, but that sounds good.
Nor am I, I'm an English teacher.
You mentioned parents before. Do you get occasions where you get resistance from parents who might not really like what you're saying?
Oh, yes.
Oh, conflict.
So, doing what I do requires an awful lot of diplomacy. You've got to be a bit of an empath. I would go as far as to say. Or an earth angel, as I was reading about yesterday.
Lovely.
Yes, which I have completely called myself since reading it.
Have you changed your dress to accommodate the earth angelness?
Do I look a little earth angel-y today?
I think so, actually. I think so.
No. In all seriousness, you do have to be able to be really diplomatic, because you are telling parents a lot of the time that there may be an issue with their child's learning, with their cognitive abilities. Now, who wants to hear that? Nobody. Mm. So on the one hand, you've got that. Then the other issue is you've got parents who are convinced that their child has a learning difficulty. Mm. And in actual fact, you know that they're just lazy.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
They're just not working. Mm. And the parent is not having any of it. And of course, then we delve into the awful situation of the dreaded two words, the words I have nightmares about, extra time.
Yes. Extra time in exams and all that sort of thing.
I loathe those two words.
Even if it was in French, would it sound better? No.
No, Sharon.
No. It must be very difficult, because you're between a rock and a hard place, aren't you, really, if you're being requested.
Absolutely, because, you know, parents talk to each other, and suddenly, you know, I've got a parent saying, well, Josephine, who lives down the road...
Which is a made-up name.
It is. Mm-hmm. You know, her parents said that she's got extra time and a reader and a scribe for her GCSEs. Mm. Matilda, another made-up name, you know, why can't she have these things? And then you're trying to explain to them that you have to have an educational psychology report, you have to have certain cognitive tests, and you have to reach and hit certain markers that are in law considered to be what is called having a substantial special educational need. And if you don't hit those scores, you can't qualify for these things.
So that's irrelevant of whether it's private school, state
irrelevant,
school.
Completely irrelevant. But, you know, some people think by banging loudly and paying an awful lot of money, then that can actually work. But it doesn't. So I do have a lot of uncomfortable conversations a lot of the time.
And the Ed Psych reports, presumably parents have got to pay for it, and if they don't want to pay for it, then they don't have it done.
Well, again, that's the difference between a state school and a private school. In the state system, if the teachers deem that there is potentially a problem with a child's learning, the local educational authority will provide an educational psychologist.
Okay.
So you have Ed Psychs linked to each state school. In the private system, that is not the case.
Okay.
And so parents will have to pay up to anywhere between £800 and £1,000 for a report.
That's quite a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot of money.
Lucrative business, I would say.
Extremely.
Yes. Is it possible for children to develop things like ADHD, dyslexia, further down the line, say in secondary school? Or is it something that they've... that's always there, but it might get worse for certain reasons.
No, as far as I'm aware, and I'm not a medical professional, you cannot catch it, if you like. It may have gone unnoticed, and therefore you can be diagnosed very late in life. Interestingly, dyslexia doesn't necessarily come from birth. You often will find children that are picked up with dyslexia that have had ear infections, and that is medically where it can also stem from. I don't know why, I don't know the ins and
That's
outs
very
of that.
Interesting.
But through some medical professionals, because I do liaise with an awful lot in my role, having an ear infection in your sort of very early years, one, two years old, that can result in dyslexia.
My daughter has very mild dyslexia, but her auntie and grandma also have it.
So it's hereditary also. Mm. So if it is in the family, Yes, it can be passed on, but it doesn't necessarily have to be in the family. As I say, you can have an infection in the head, which is potentially, like meningitis, for example, an earache can then infect the meninges and the development of the synaptic nerves.
Wow.
I sound terribly medical now, don't I?
That's very good.
And you can have a resulting learning difficulty.
Gosh. Obviously, some of these girls are going to have quite low confidence when it comes to academic issues. How do you help to improve their confidence and self-esteem so that they can have the maximum performance?
Well, I think, again, it's about not sitting them in a room with a load of other, you know, a classroom full of other children and just expecting them to be able to access the average, what the average learner is expected to access. So it really doesn't take that much. It literally just takes the teacher being aware that they might have two or three children in their lesson that has varying levels of dyslexia and differentiating just minimally according to their needs. And that makes a massive difference to the child, particularly their confidence. I think also having a little bit of extra tutoring really does help them, because one-on-one with a person with dyslexia makes a big difference.
I was going to ask about the tutoring, because presumably as Head of Learning Support, you are in charge of, or you manage tutors. What kind of methods do they use to, say, for dyslexia when they've got a student?
Well, apart from the fact that just being one-on-one helps enormously, and going at a much slower pace, using whiteboards, so you're using, it's not pen and paper, it's not loads and loads of PowerPoints, it's whiteboards, big writing. And actually what I find very interesting is that a lot of children that I'm teaching at the moment do not know how to phonetically pronounce the alphabet. So I actually take them right back to basics. They think I'm insane because I'm saying, right, say the alphabet. And they go A, B, C, D, E. And I say, no. How do you say the alphabet but by sound? I said, because if you don't know the sounds, how on earth can you learn to spell and read? And then they're going, oh my God, yeah. So, and I'm talking 14, 15-year-olds cannot make those sounds.
We are going to a quick ad break now, but afterwards we're going to be talking again to Mary about learning sport and also her alternative career.
This is Just Women every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
The amazing Cheese and Chilli Festival returns to Sharford Park in Guildford on the 22nd and 23rd of July. We're celebrating all things cheese and chilli with lots to entertain the whole family. Stunt shows, live music, falconry display, magic shows, Punch and Judy, the not-to-be-missed chilli-eating competition and lots more. There's real ale and cider bars, demonstrations including a wine masterclass and cooking with chillies. There's even a craft market to pick up some unique gifts. Early bird tickets available online at a discounted rate. Check out our website or visit the Guildford Tourist Information Centre. Cheese and Chilli Festival, Sharford Park, Guildford, 22nd and 23rd of July.
Not having a will when you pass away can be an unnecessary financial nightmare for your loved ones, on top of the grief they've already experienced. Let Goddard's accountants help you write your will to give you peace of mind. You may think, I'm only 25, I don't need a will. On the contrary, if you have any assets, for example, a house, savings, a business, or people you would hope to help look after even when you're gone, then you should consider making a will. Goddard's accountants can provide the expert help you require. And, as we've been in business for 40 years, you know you're in good hands. Phone us on 020 8941 2187. Goddard's Accountants, West Molesey. We take away your pain so you get the gain.
If you're passing Walton Community Hospital or near the halfway in Walton, then pop into the hospital coffee shop run by the League of Friends. Enjoy a nice cup of tea for only 60p or a delicious cup of coffee for only 70p. Plus a range of sweets, biscuits, soft drinks, crisps, cards and sundries. We're all volunteers so we can keep the prices low. That's a coffee shop at Walton Community Hospital in Rodney Road, Walton. Open from 10am to 4pm weekdays and from 2pm to 4pm on Saturdays.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Sharon Finch. Before the break, we were chatting to Mary Akerslan. Welcome back, Mary.
Thank you, Sharon.
You were on a bit of a roll before. Hopefully you're still on a roll.
Yeah, you stopped me in full swing.
Yeah, sorry about that. So let's go back to, you were talking about phonetics and the importance of learning that and having to, even with older children, go back to it. Are phonetics not being emphasised enough in schools? Is that why you're having to go back to it?
Yeah, so essentially, again, going back to when you and I were 2-3 years old going into school, we weren't taught to read, we weren't taught our letters phonetically. So reading and spelling basically is learning by memory. So you're having to learn spellings just by memory. So you're taking on an enormous amount of information. Now, people with dyslexia actually have, that's their struggle. They cannot make sense of patterns of sounds and letters put together. Mm. Now, of course, their memory, so working memory is also an issue with dyslexic people, short-term working memory. So to try and retain all of those various spellings is an impossibility. Then I started to, when I started working with children with special educational needs, we've got some wonderful resources, and there's one book called Alpha to Omega. I'm afraid I don't know the author. And it really struck me one day, because as I was reading it, it was saying, how on earth can you expect these children to pick up spellings and actually learn to read and enjoy it, more to the point, if they actually cannot sound out what on earth they are trying to read or spell? So when I've got the children that I tutor, we spend a lot of time in the first couple of sessions doing a, b, c, d, e, looking at the vowel sounds in particular, because in each and every word, bar a few, you will have either one vowel or you will have two vowels put together. And that's called, when you've got two vowels put together, a vowel digraph. And if you've got I and an E together, it makes a particular sound, or an A and an E, or an I and an O. When and if you teach the children those sounds and to recognise those sounds, and when they say, ah, I can see that those two vowels go together, make that sound, breaking down a word and learning to spell it and read it suddenly makes sense. And so it's so important. And then, of course, the funniest thing I've seen, actually, is when I'm trying to get them to do the abacada, they do it in French. And I'm saying, what are you doing? And they're like, oh. And I say, this isn't French, this is English. So it's amazing that 14, 15-year-old, 16-year-old children do not know the sound of their own alphabet, which, of course, we really need to address. And I think schools, primary schools, are now starting to address this and change the way, and they are doing it phonetically.
So at some stage they changed their mind and didn't do it phonetically, and now they're changing it back
again. Yes,
right.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we've learnt a lot about your role of learning support, and I understand that you have an alternative career in the offing, probably taking you back to the TV presenter lure. And you've recently become manager of a comedian, a birdie told me, a cardinal birdie called Tom, who is the said comedian. Hello, Tom, if you're listening. So just tell us how that came about.
Well, Sharon, all I can do really is shake my head at this because, you know, again, as I said at the very beginning of this interview, the things that you end up doing that you perhaps love, you tend to just fall into rather than it being a plan. Now, I'm a woman of a certain age, as I was telling you earlier, with my hot flushes. And I
thought that was your blusher, sorry.
Sadly not. And I am all about, at the moment, grabbing life by the horns.
Glad to use that word.
Thank you. Yeah. Because, you know, life is short and it is there for the living. And I am so deciding that everything needs to be answered with a yes at
Excellent.
The moment. If you're asked something, yes.
Okay.
So I think there was a film about it.
I'll have a bacon sandwich and a sausage sandwich after the show, please.
Well, that's a yes for you.
Yeah.
But so at work, I met a wonderful human being called Thomas Newman. Now, he radiates light. He just radiates light, laughter, and just he cheers the children up any child would be lucky to be taught by him and the staff as well. And I said to him one day, you should be on the stage. Now, I also read, I do a lot of reading, if you can see it in your mind, you can touch it in your hand.
Nice, like it.
And I was looking and listening to all these very successful people, actors, you know, J.K. Rowling, anybody who's got out there, made an awful lot of money in what they do, are terribly happy and fulfilled in their lives. And basically, it's all about anything is possible. And if you can imagine it, you can do it. So I was saying this to Tom one day. Lo and behold, we imagined it. Now we're doing it.
So you've done... He's done one stand-up.
He's
in
done
London.
One stand-up
is that right?
gig. We did a bit of research. We did a recce at this particular place, which is very well known for being the best open mic night for comedy virgins, if I can say that. Mm-hmm. And so we had a little look. We stayed the evening, networked, if you like. And then I said, right, Tom, I'm going to sign you up. Are you really up for this? Are we going to do this? He said, yes, Mary, I am.
And how would you describe his humour, Mary?
Larry Grayson. I don't know if people will remember him. Shut that door.
Of course we do. Dave's a bit younger than us. He might not.
It's great, innocent, fun for all the family comedy. It's Saturday night television stuff.
So you don't have to think too hard about the... punchline.
No, because actually, very thank you for reminding me. It's not about the jokes with
mm-hmm,
Tom.
Mm-hmm.
They are funny, but where the humour lies is in Tom himself, his mannerisms, his voice, his gesturing. He is just in himself extremely amusing. And we're trying now to stalk Paul O'Grady because we think that they could be best friends potentially. So we're going to try and find ourselves a dog.
Okay, this is getting a bit strange.
Because Paul O'Grady loves dogs.
You'll have to go to India because he's in India with the elephants at the moment, I think.
I can't get an elephant. that's taking it a bit too far. But I was thinking...
Dogs are good.
Get a dog.
Yeah.
Find out where he lives, casually stroll past with the dog, and then say, Paul, how interesting to see you
That's
here.
That's a great plan. He might even be listening, who knows?
This is my friend Tom, and we were thinking of then making a dog-umentary.
Did you make that up just now, or
no,
was that one of his?
Tom came up with that.
So that gives you a little flavour of Mr. Tom Newman's humour. Excellent. That was good that you remembered that.
I'm getting very hot,
on that
Sharon.
Note, my nose is running from laughing, and it's the end of the interview. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you, either about being manager of Mr. Tom Newman...
I don't think people are going to trust my learning support abilities after this.
I think it's a fine balance.
I'm multifaceted, yes. Multi-talented.
And I know you do tutoring as well.
Yes.
So could you just tell the listeners what your email address is?
Oh, yes. So if you would... trust me to tutor your son or daughter. I generally work with secondary school children on a one-to-one basis with English. You can get in touch with me on Akarslan Mary.
That's AKARSLAN.
So akarslanmary @gmail.com.
Thank you very much, Mary, for coming onto the show and
You're
talking
very
to
welcome,
us.
Sharon.
And we look forward to any comic updates.
Absolutely.
Yes. And maybe Tom could come on one of the shows, actually.
I would love him
yeah.
too.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Sharon Finch. I'm now delighted to welcome our second guest to the show, who's Claire Garner, a musician and director of an orchestra. Welcome to the show, Claire.
Thank you for having me, Sharon.
Could you start by giving us a bit of information about yourself and what led you into the world of music?
Sure, yeah. Well, it all really began when I was about 7 years old, and somebody, and I think it was my grandma, but I can't swear to that, I think it was my grandma, said the violin is the most beautiful instrument in the entire world. And so I... said the words that every parent dreads. Can I please have violin lessons? And then the opportunity came up when I was 8 to have the lessons at school. And I started from there. And very quickly, the teacher came out to see my parents, said, bring her for private lessons. And I've just loved it from day one. I absolutely adore the violin particularly. I play many instruments now, but that will always be my first and favourite. And from there, I've just kind of gradually gone on to learn more and more and immerse myself in music as much as I possibly can.
Do you think you're a natural musician? Is there such a thing as a natural musician?
There is, yes, definitely. I think I have a good natural sense of timing, but also intonation, or the tuning, the pitching. Mm. I have what is called perfect relative pitch. There are people out there with absolute perfect pitch, and you can say to them, you know, sing the note A, and they'll be able to do it. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. I'm usually not far off, but I can't do that.
We won't ask you to do it.
No, I wouldn't be able to. And equally, you know, they can hear a note and tell you that's a B flat. Or whatever it is. That doesn't work for me. However, if I'm given a reference point, I can pitch anything from it absolutely perfectly. So I have the perfect relative pitch, and I have a very good sense of tuning. And you have to, if you're playing a string instrument, especially, you know, something like the violin, it's really, really difficult to do it otherwise.
And quite often, if you've got a musical family, it kind of passes on.
It does, yeah.
Is that the case with your family?
To a certain extent, yes. I think a lot of people on my mum's side of the family, sort of the greater extended family, are quite musical. On my dad's side, my nan played the piano. Her cousin also played the piano. My dad started learning when he was younger, but didn't really take it very far, and he regrets it now. But now he's taken up the bass guitar, so
I'd like to take up the drums, but I'm not sure if anybody else in the house would like it, because it'd be quite
drums
noisy.
Drums are great. Do you know what? My partner bought me a kit, an electric kit, for my birthday last year, and it's the most therapeutic thing in the world. If you've had a bad day, you can just take it all out on the drum kit.
I might do that.
They're amazing.
The cat might disappear forever, but...
Yeah, mine were quite alarmed when I started that.
And in your bio, you've played several instruments, including piano, cello, trumpet, trombone, clarinet, guitar, bass and drums.
Yes.
That's huge. So is it the case that you play well all of those, or is there one in particular that you're... you play better than the others?
Violin will always be the best. All of those I can play to a sort of reasonable standard. I can get tunes out of, you know, flutes, saxophones, you know, plenty of other things that aren't mentioned there. Even an egg slicer, I discovered. Much to my mum's horror, when I was drying up one day, started playing "Oh, When the Saints Go Marching In" on it.
That is, we should have brought one in with an egg sandwich or something.
I love music, and I like learning about different things. So once I'd mastered the violin, I took piano to grade 7 as well. Mm-hmm. And then from that, viola and cello are quite easy to pick up, you know, the similar sort of methodology with the string instruments. And from that, you know, then once you can read the music, it makes it easier to learn other things. So we have this great thing going on in Chertsey. It's a grade 1-a-thon, and I got involved with this about 3 years ago. In fact, I think that may have been the first one. And it was through my trumpet teacher, and he said, I've got another student who's doing this thing where people take grade 1 for charity. Do you fancy being involved? And I thought, oh yeah, that sounds amazing. I'll do that. So that's how I got into the brass, really. Certainly that's how I got into the trombone, having already started the trumpet. And I've just met this amazing community of people around, and we've even got, you know, a Chertsey Music Community official page going on. Chertsey's a wonderful place for music. It really is. It's fab.
Did you study music at any stage?
No, actually, I didn't. I read physics at university, just to be weird. I did actually want to do the joint course that Imperial College do with the Royal College of Music, which is physics with musical performance. But on the day I did my Royal College of Music audition, as with the day I did my National Youth Orchestra audition, I had completely wrecked all the ligaments and tendons in my left wrist, and I had it in a splint up until five minutes before the audition, so they didn't really go so well.
It wasn't meant to be.
No, it wasn't.
Is there a similarity between physics and music?
There's a lot of overlap. I mean, I love the fact that when I'm playing the instrument, I can use the knowledge of how the sound patterns work and everything to get the most out of the instrument, and when students ask me certain things, I can explain it to them, or I can give them the choice. You know, if they're 7 years old, they say, I can't explain this to you. We'll take A-level physics. Are you up for that? Mm. Sometimes they say yes and then look at me blankly, but it's quite fun.
So after uni, you decided to teach various musical instruments?
Yeah, in fact, that all started before. I gave my sister some extra coaching to get through her grade 5 violin and realised, actually, I can see what you need to do to achieve what you need to, and realised I can do this teaching thing. And so then when a friend asked me would I teach her friend's children violin and piano, I thought, yeah, okay, I can do this. And I've never really looked back from there, and that was at 17. So I did some teaching on the side while I was at university to make a bit more money, and then carried on afterwards, and in 2011 kind of formalised it and, you know, set it up as an actual business. At some point I'd love to kind of expand that, you know, turn it into a proper music school, have other teachers come and teach the other instruments that I can't and all that, but I'm a way off that yet.
Do you think that there is enough music in school? Because there's been quite a few debates on television about the softer subjects being reduced, that there's not enough that actually adds. I think who was it that came on? A musician came on and said it was actually detrimental to the development of children. Andrew Lloyd Webber, I think it was.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have much experience of what goes on in the schools in terms of music, because I don't go to schools. You know, all my teaching is private. But from what I've heard, from what I've seen in the news, no, I think music is so important. I was having a chat with a couple of friends at the Rock Project last night, actually. We do the adult Rock Project classes. And they said, you were right. Music is good for the soul. And it really is. It helps de-stress you. It can help you concentrate. Mm. It's good for your development of your brain and all sorts of other skills. It's very social. There are so many benefits to music. And I think, honestly, you can't do enough of it.
There was a programme recently about children in South Korea, mm-hmm. and music being a massive part of their learning and how it's linked to excellence in maths as well.
Yes, yeah, there's a lot of maths in music, and there's a lot of counting. The two, they go hand in hand, maths and science and music. You kind of think they're polar opposites, but actually when you dig deeper into it, there's a lot of overlap, and being good at one helps you to be good at the other.
Your students, have you had any students that have gone on to have music as their career, or that are very, really talented that you can tell us about?
I've not had any that have gone on to make music a career yet. I'm really hoping I will have at some point. I would love nothing better. I have quite a few who are really talented, actually, and it's an absolute joy to teach them. I have some who take to the instruments really naturally, which is just lovely to see. But they're all really, really hard working, especially since I introduced a Student of the Week award scheme. That's worked brilliantly.
Oh, good incentive.
Oh, yeah.
And do they come to you to learn one instrument and then perhaps you think, oh, that would be good if you could do that? You seem to be a natural.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes they switch over. Sometimes they have an affinity with one instrument and they come to me for violin and piano, say, and then they realise they don't actually like piano that much, so they give it up and just do violin. And I encourage people to find which instrument suits them, because it's different for everyone. And I had a student who was learning violin, and she came to me all terrified, and I don't think I want to do violin anymore. I think I'd like to learn the trumpet. And I was like, well, great, good for you. Find your instrument. And she's gone on to learn the trumpet, and she was brilliant at it. And I think that's wonderful.
Presumably these students are quite self-motivated, and it's not a matter of, you know, the parent insisting they're coming, but they don't actually want to do music.
I don't think that works. Mm. You know, so many parents, I've come across this so many times over the years, you push somebody into something, if they don't want to do it, you're never going to get the best out of them. They have to want to do it themselves. They have to enjoy it. And that's what I like to really get into my lessons, just the enjoyment of it, and to get them motivated and to get them loving it and get them passionate.
Well, we're going to take a short break now, but don't go away, as we're right back chatting with Claire about her latest new venture, which is very exciting.
It is.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge, is open 100 hours every week to meet your immediate medical needs? We're here for you from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. weekdays, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturdays, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sundays. Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all the over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The Pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us, 100 hours every week.
Do you need help with your Apple Mac but you don't know where to go?
Rafael is your local Apple certified support professional. He can help you with any of your Apple needs, such as setting up iCloud accounts and family sharing. Or perhaps you'd simply like to learn a few new things about your Apple Mac. Simply visit www.rafaelkukla.com or call 07907-795000 today to arrange an on-site visit in the comfort of your home or office. That's 07907-795000 for peace of mind Apple support.
When you're looking to send important documents and packages, don't settle for second best. Choose Mailboxes etc. in Church Street, Weybridge. We offer you high street access to fast, reliable and internet trackable delivery services from world-class couriers, including UPS, FedEx, Parcelforce and DHL. We also offer a range of Royal Mail services and can pack your shipment so that it arrives safely. Around the corner, around the country or around the world, big or small, Mailboxes etc. in Weybridge can collect, pack and ship it all.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome back to the show. Before the break, we were talking to Claire Garner, who is a musician and recently set up the Chertsey Orchestra. Claire, can you tell us how that came about?
Sure. Well, it actually came about through the fact that I feel very strongly about learning to play as part of a group. I mean, as I said earlier, music is a very social thing. I spent a lot of my youth in orchestras, in the Redditch Youth Orchestra, the Stratford Music Centre Orchestra, then the Midland Youth Orchestra, which is now the CBSO Youth Orchestra, Central England Ensemble. I did a stint with Hazelmere Orchestra. I loved playing in orchestras. It's been one of the most fun experiences of my life, and I want to give people that opportunity. Equally, I tend to think that, you know, you go along for your instrumental lessons, you learn to play as a soloist, and that's you doing your thing, and the accompanist has to follow you. And then all of a sudden you get thrown into a group, and you're not thinking about what other people are doing, you're not necessarily listening to what other people are doing around you, how your part fits with that, you don't know the orchestral etiquette, like how to hold your violin, how to sit properly, all of that stuff. And I'm really passionate about teaching people that properly, getting them to do rhythmic exercises, etc. So anyway, I started doing a bit of a Christmas get-together a couple of years back. And the first time, it was just a few students who I taught who all lived in the same street. And we got together around one of the houses and played some Christmas carols, and it was just lovely. So the following year, I extended it to all my students, and we did it in my living room, and it was great. And I arranged these Christmas carols, and they all learned their parts beforehand, and it was beautiful. It was wonderful. And then last Christmas, I had so many students, I had to hire St. Peter's Church Hall for it.
Oh my gosh, that was brilliant.
It was amazing. We got all the parents along, and some of the parents play instruments, so we got them involved too. And it was a whole, pretty much an orchestral experience, and I was conducting it, and I've wanted to do this orchestra, I've wanted to run an orchestra for about 10 years, and so my partner Martin, he's just like, come on, go for it, just do it, this is the right time, everybody's fired up, everybody's excited, you've done this Christmas thing, everybody loved it, get the church booked, do it on a regular basis. And so I thought, yeah, you know what, absolutely. As Mary said earlier, you know, I've been visualising it, time to make it a reality.
That's excellent.
And so I did. I got the hall booked, I got the church booked, and got some publicity out there in a very short space of time, and launched it all in January.
And is it, what night, or is it a day or a night?
It's a Tuesday evening from 6:30 till 8.
And what age group? Is there a limit?
Nope, there is absolutely no limit. It is. I wanted to do this, you know, all ages and all abilities. Obviously, you know, it's people have come up to me and asked, you know, if you're a complete beginner and you've never touched an instrument, can you do it? And I'm like, well, that's a bit difficult because you need a bit of coaching in your instrument to be able to do it. But, you know, our youngest is 9, I think, and has got grade 1 violin. So, you know, right down to that level. And equally, we've got adults. We've got somebody who's, you know, took grade 7 on the oboe. So, you know, there's a huge range, and everybody plays together really nicely. And I love that we've got the enthusiasm and the energy of the children combined with the maturity and everything of the adults, and it's just a really nice blend. It works really well.
And what type of music do you play? Is it a mix?
It's a complete mix. We try and do a bit of everything. We're doing some popular classics. We've played Ode to Joy. We've played the Blue Danube Waltz. They're simplified arrangements, obviously, but then equally, I got an arrangement of Yesterday by the Beatles. So I've put on the flyers, we play everything from Beethoven to the Beatles, okay. And it's completely true. I wrote an arrangement of Happy by Pharrell Williams, and they're all loving that. Mm. We do, you know, everything, and I like taking suggestions as well. We did Star Wars theme, so it's a huge mix of stuff. It's some slow, some fast, and making a really good sound.
Is it completely instrumental, or are you after singers as well?
Actually, there's a Chertsey choir that happens immediately after, so okay. That's the thing for the singers,
right.
And I'm really hoping that we'll do a joint venture, because it's my friend Kate that runs the choir, and we each do both. She comes and plays with the orchestra, I go and sing with the choir, and yes, you know, that was part of doing Happy, is that we'd actually like to do that as a joint venture with the orchestra and the choir together.
Are you looking for more people to join the choir, and are there any instruments that you particularly need?
We're looking for everything for the orchestra, and not just necessarily the traditional orchestral instruments. We've actually got an English concertina player.
Oh, wow.
And it makes a beautiful sound. It's such a gorgeous instrument. And Sarah, the lady who plays it, she said to me, you know, I've not been able to join orchestras. People haven't been welcoming. It's not a typical orchestral instrument. And I find that so sad, because it's amazing to have her as part of the group. So anything goes, you know, guitars, drums.
Okay.
We need more of everything. Literally more of everything, and we'd love to have as many people as possible come along.
And people need to bring their own instruments.
Own instruments, and preferably own music stands as well,
right,
please.
Okay.
Yeah. But okay. The not this coming Tuesday, but the Tuesday after, Tuesday the 18th, we're running a free open rehearsal. And so if people want to come along and listen and, you know, see what we do in a rehearsal, it's not a concert, I will stress that. It is a rehearsal. We're going to be rehearsing, we're going to be stopping, we're going to be doing little bits of the piece all over again. Typical rehearsal, but just, you know, that people can come in and watch. And equally, if people want to come and have a taster and join in and play with us, I would absolutely love that. The more the merrier. Everybody is welcome.
If I played a musical instrument, I would be there. Triangle and glockenspiel, my only dips into the musical world.
Do you know what? Honestly, we'd love that. I have a glockenspiel. I bought a glockenspiel.
Oh, I love the sound of it.
It's perfect. Honestly, come along, because our saxophonist, who also plays the glockenspiel, she can't make it on the 18th, and we're doing Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy, so please come and play the glockenspiel for us. That would be amazing.
I'll bring some sugared plums as well.
Perfect.
And have you got any big events planned for the orchestra coming up at Christmas, or any dreams of any events coming up?
Definitely. I'd like to put on some proper concerts. We've tended to find that with so few members this term, it wasn't practical to do a concert, because obviously with even one person missing, it changes the sound so much. So I'd love to put on a Christmas concert, and I'm fully intending to do that. Haven't got a date sorted yet, but I'm looking to do that in the next few weeks, because obviously the Christmas term gets so busy. Want to get everything booked and sorted and in people's diaries as early as possible. But yes, we'll have a, you know, Christmas carols, Christmas concert. You know, I love doing that.
Claire, sadly, it's the drawing to the end of the show. We mentioned earlier how quickly the time's gone.
It really has.
If anybody wants to get in touch with you about tutoring or about joining the Chertsey Orchestra, could you confirm your contact details?
Yes, absolutely. So for tutoring, the best email address is info@finetuningmusic.co.uk. And for the orchestra, equally, you can email on that address, the Fine Tuning Music one. But there's also chertseymusiccommunity@outlook.com, and that actually goes to myself for the orchestra, Kate for the choir, and also my partner Martin, who runs the Rock Project as well.
Excellent. And before you go, are there any words of wisdom that you could pass on to any budding musicians out there?
Oh, I would say, go for it. Try everything. Try as many instruments as you can. Try as many styles as you can. Find what works for you. Find what you love. And then just enjoy it. And, you know, you don't have to take it too seriously. Music should be about enjoyment and fun, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you for those fine words. I'd like to thank both of our guests today on Just Women. That's Mary Akerslan and Claire Garner. And a huge thanks to my technical director here, Dave Gemitus, who's been running the desk smoothly and laughing when he was supposed to laugh. So that's great. Thanks for that. If you'd like to come on the show or know someone who would, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us, justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with contact details, and we'll get in touch. If you want to know more about Just Women, details of past guests and shows are on our website, which is brooklandsradio.co.uk, and you can also find us on Facebook and justwomen@brooklandsradio. If you're on our page, please remember to like us whilst you're there. So thanks for listening. Please join us again next week for Just Women. That's live at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, repeated at 8 p.m. on Thursday. It's goodbye from me, Sharon Finch. And
you're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.